Paranormal Perception is produced and distributed by 22 Creations Multimedia, LLC. Welcome to Paranormal Perception. The final episode. For the past 8 years, this show has consistently stood out from other paranormal media. Yes, you heard from paranormal investigators, psychics, ufologists, and cryptid hunters. But you also heard from horror and paranormal filmmakers and actors, online influencers, paranormal authors, and those not typically heard or seen on other paranormal media. In other words, not the same old paranormal. Now, for the final time, here's the host of Paranormal Perception, Henry San Miguel.
Greetings, paranormal true believers, and happy Halloween to all of you. I mean, it was Halloween morning when I recorded and released this episode. You might be listening on Halloween night, or it might not even be Halloween anymore when you're listening to this episode. But regardless, when I recorded it, it was Halloween, so happy Halloween. Let me kick off with that. Now, this episode is an episode that was actually going to happen in December of this year. But then I realized, speaking of, that Halloween is on a Friday this year. And since Paranormal Perception's usual release date, with a few exceptions, but the usual release day was every Friday, I figured, you know, perfect time to end the show. Not only on a Friday, but Halloween Friday. And yeah, by the way, I think you figured that out from the intro, and I've said it now. This is the final episode of Paranormal Perception, ever. Not for a while. I'm not going to be taking a break, and I'll come back in a month or two. I've done that before, but not this time. This is it. After this, no more Paranormal Perception. Never again. I'm done. Why? Well, honestly, there's quite a few reasons why I'm ending the show, and I'll give you a detailed explanation at the end of this episode as to why that is, but I don't want to talk about it now before I get to the goodbyes. I want to have some fun, some spooky Halloween fun. Again, it is Halloween when I recorded this, at least, so I wanted to have a little bit of Halloween spooky fun, and I also, I mean, how could we not, as the final episode, I do want to take a trip back down memory lane from the past 8 years of Paranormal Perception. I'm just going to talk about some of the guests that I enjoyed. It doesn't mean that they're the best, but that made a difference to me and in my paranormal journey. I might play some clips from some of them if there's time, but knowing how I talk, there probably won't be. But before we get to that, like I said, I like to have some Halloween fun. As you all know, in the last, 7 years, Paranormal Perception has become, I guess the word is serious, I was going to say dignified, but not really, because that usually means boring too, and it's not boring. So I'll say serious. It's become a more serious paranormal podcast. We had some laughs every now and then. But it became serious mainly because a lot of the topics, a lot of the guests that I had on, they didn't call for laughs. We couldn't be funny in what we were talking about. So that's part of the reason why it became a more serious show. However, you all know that Halloween and Christmas, we did this on Christmas also, that's when we let our hair down, so to speak. That's when mainly we told ghost stories for both shows, for the Halloween episode, and then also again for the Christmas episode. And when I say we, yeah, the staff, and really most of it, and this is when it really got fun, is when I asked all of you to send in your ghost stories, your experiences. Boy, did you ever. Some of you sent songs. It was fun. It was fun listening to your stories, your experiences. And that's what became the Halloween episodes, till this year. Well, not this year because we're not doing it this year. I know a couple of you sent your stories, and I didn't ask you guys for it. So Thank you, but we're not going to play them back. Instead, what I'm going to do, and this is how we're going to start, I'm going to play back a few of the stories that you guys sent in, maybe some from us. Actually, I think they're all from us, quite honestly. And it's not because they're better or those are the best, or it's just laziness, really, honestly. Just lazy. As I was getting ready, as I was getting this final episode ready, I just went back over the seasons and scrubbed through some of the Halloween episodes, and I just honestly just picked out some of the stories that were there. I didn't even listen to them. I just picked them out here, put it in, boom, there they are. So you're going to hear those in a second, but I did decide to start with something a little bit different, not a ghost story, but not even from Paranormal Perception, actually. It's from my other podcast, The Geek Speak Show. This is from back in 2011, which was the second year of the Geek Speak Show. That was the Halloween episode back then. This is the first time that I met author Leslie Bannatyne. She's Halloween author, Halloween historian. You've probably seen her on, you know, the Halloween documentaries that Travel has or Discovery Channel has. You've seen her on there. Anything that has to do with the history of Halloween, you'll probably find Leslie Bannatyne contributing a segment or two or five to the thing. She wrote a book back then in 2011. It was brand new, had just come out. It was called Halloween Nation. Not really about the history of Halloween, but more about how we celebrate, the traditions that we have, and how we celebrate Halloween in the 21st century. So I'm going to start with that. It's not boring at all. It's a fun interview. She gives some of her personal anecdotes. So do I. And we have laughs. It's a lot of laughs. It's a fun interview from the Geek Speak Show. Again, from 2011. This is Halloween historian Leslie Bannatyne. And then we'll tell some ghost stories. A little bit of what we used to do. Keep the tradition alive, at least in that way, on the final episode. But before that, Halloween traditions.
Halloween. What is it about this holiday that so fascinates young and old alike? Halloween has remained at the heart of our yearly fall celebrations, the last hurrah before the cold of winter sets in. It is the one day of the year in which we can laugh at death. So we take pleasure in the morbid, the creepy, and the terrifying. So put on your costume, turn out the lights, and prepare to be frightened.
And here we go. Let's Speak Geek.
You're listening to the Geek Speak Ray Show.
On the Geek Speak Radio Show.
And here we go. Welcome to the Geek Speak Radio Show. It's here.
Happy Halloween, guys.
My favorite time of the year.
Mine too.
Not in December. It's in October, especially the last 3 days of October. Halloween is here.
It's only for one day, though.
Well, yeah, but here, you know, we make it month long.
Yeah, we do.
Really, if you guys know me and you listen to the show, it's year long for me. To your chagrin, because I know how you love scary stuff.
I think mine's only for like 2 days, and then I'm ready for Christmas.
Yeah, the tame holiday for you.
Yeah, that is true.
Okay, so this is going to be the Halloween show for this year. My favorite time of year, like I said. So I figured, we kind of did a little bit last year. We had our ghost host explain Halloween to us last year. This year, I figured, let's go to an expert on Halloween. I just got the book a couple of days ago, actually, and I do finish it because you know how fast I read. It's called Halloween Nation, Behind the Scenes of America's Fright Night. And that means it is kind of a history of Halloween, but it also especially talks about how we see Halloween today.
Huh.
Because yes, Halloween does have a history, but we celebrate a little bit different nowadays.
Yeah, we do.
So on the phone, to kick things off on our Halloween show, is the author of Halloween Nation. That would be Leslie Bannatyne, author of Halloween Nation. Leslie, welcome to the Geek Speak Radio Show.
Hey, thanks for having me on here.
It's our pleasure. So tell us a quick history of Halloween before we get into the book.
2,000 years in 60 seconds or less.
Exactly.
Well, you know what? I'll start with American Halloween because that's what I've mostly concentrated on. And Halloween, although it goes back many, many, many years in different forms, in America it wasn't really a holiday until after the Civil War, and for three good reasons. One, the Civil War gave us unprecedented numbers of dead and missing, and so people got very interested in trying to communicate with the spirit world and find out where their loved ones were. And it's this period you see more seances, and spiritualism gets going in this country, but people were desperate to know, and a holiday like Halloween that was concerned so much with ghosts and the afterlife was very attractive to them. The second thing was cheap printing got really cheap right then, and there were a ton of magazines and newspapers that were born in this time, all looking for content. And the third thing is that Victorians were incredibly interested in exotic cultures. And for them, Highland Scotland, which is where Halloween kind of comes from, one of the countries it comes from, was just as exotic as Fiji or Borneo. So they were really interested in this kind of quaint rural holiday that came from an exotic part of the world. And they started to throw the very first Halloween parties.
Would you say back then they were a little bit more superstitious than we are today, or is it about the same?
That's a great question. That's a really great question. They were certainly superstitious, but it was in fun. In these first Halloween parties, it was all for fun. You know, who were you going to marry, and what profession would your husband or your wife have? Things like that. It was kind of half flirting and half looking into the future. Nowadays, we're superstitious, I think, about an awful lot of things. I mean, you find so many more people that are into ghosts now than you might have been even 30 or 40 years ago.
Yeah, I'm superstitious myself. There's a little ritual I go through. I'm not going to say it before I start the show.
Let's just say it has to do with sports.
Baseball players. I mean, we've got a lot of quirks these days.
Yeah. So again, we're talking to Leslie Ballantyne. She's the author of Halloween Nation, Behind the Scenes of America's Fright Night. If you guys don't have it yet and you're a Halloween fan, shame on you. But go to our GeekSpeakRadioShow.com webpage. On the link section, I have a link to that. You guys can get the book. So, Leslie, when you were doing the research for Halloween Nation, did you discover some things that you didn't know about Halloween, whether history or just customs and how we celebrate Halloween?
I would say absolutely. I mean, the history was something I was familiar with, but talking to people across the country and how they celebrate Halloween, there were things I was not aware of. For example, I did not know about horror burlesque. I didn't know. I knew there was a new burlesque movement in this country, but I didn't know there was a whole group of women doing horror-themed burlesque shows. That was a good one. I didn't know a lot about the folks that designed horror props and Halloween props until I went out and actually went to the factories and the businesses and watched them pour severed ears and make zombie fingers and things like that. Amazingly imaginative stuff. And I wasn't aware about how big pageants worked. Like, I went and visited the people who put on the Village Parade in New York City, which is a huge, it's I guess our country's largest single Halloween night event. 60,000 people march, 2 million people watch. Mm-hmm. But there's a company that makes these giant puppets that are in the parade that each year they're different. They're a different theme. And so I watched those get built, and I had no idea. It's a whole slew of several hundred volunteers that put those things together. So it was all kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, like I said, I have the Halloween Nation book, and I just finished reading it. That's what I found interesting too, and I never thought about it either. I mean, we enjoy not just during Halloween and October, but I like scary stuff anyway.
Yeah,
but it's actually a business. I mean, people have to create all those severed heads and body parts and all the things you see in the haunted attractions.
They do, and they have to predict what's going to scare us.
Yeah,
you know, they have to predict in March or December even what's going to scare us the next year, which is one of the things I love about Halloween, because you can't actually do that 100% all the time. I mean, what I love is that Halloween is still a large part do-it-yourself, and it's still very creative. It starts in the imagination and moves out into the world. So, for example, this year, I think we're going to see a lot of tributes to Steve Jobs at Halloween, a lot of iPods and iMacs, and And the costume and props folks could never have seen that coming last February.
Yeah, Romo, don't you want to be an iPad for Halloween?
No, I don't. But I do agree with you because, you know, Halloween has become a business.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you, Leslie, was do you think that Halloween has gotten commercial?
Too commercial.
Yeah.
Too commercial. That's I don't personally, but that's because I've spent a lot of time talking to people who make their own things.
Yeah.
So from my point of view, I know that there's instead of a group of people sitting in a boardroom trying to decide what we'll buy, I know that there are also people sitting in kitchens and basements and garages trying to figure out how to make something really, really cool for Halloween.
Yeah.
So from my point of view, yes, it's a huge mass market event. It is also a homemade, do-it-yourself original.
Now, do you think that television and movies, especially the horror movies, have you know, fed into this, or I would say was the kicker for this business, you know, for
absolutely.
The Halloween business? Yeah,
absolutely. And you know, Hollywood and Halloween have always been tied together. You know, in the very early days, the first costumes were Minnie Mouse and Donald Duck. So, you know, you've always had a connection between popular culture and movies and television and Halloween. And it just got a huge bump when Halloween got associated with horror, and specifically with John Carpenter's 1978 Halloween movie, the first one. It was for the first time that Halloween was really seen as a horror holiday because the movie was called Halloween, it was set on Halloween, and it had Halloween as a theme. So it kind of made people think of Halloween differently from that point forward. And as Hollywood horror has gotten incredibly more graphic and more sophisticated, so have Halloween props, costumes, and entertainments. They definitely go hand in hand.
Yeah, it seems like Halloween, especially the last 5-6 years, it's more about you look forward to what's the next Saw movie or now the next Paranormal Activity movie. And you know, to me, I like the original Saw actually more than what they've done with it. And I do mm-hmm. like the Paranormal Activity movies, but to me, Halloween has always been, I keep it more traditional. I mean, I like being scared, and I like the history behind it. And I like you said, making my own costumes. Because especially now, not just with the horror, but with the superhero movies, which we do talk about on the show here. But this year, you know, Thor and Captain America are going to be the biggest costumes. And instead of making the costumes, parents go out and spend the money and make them. So that's what we meant by being more commercial than just about the fun.
Certainly, yeah, certainly there's just a million things that you can buy out there. But I still think costumes are probably 80% inside the imagination. And so, you know, you can put on a cape and a pair of ears and you know you're Batman if you believe it, especially if you're 7.
Yeah, well, you need the voice too.
Well, I'm Batman.
That helps too. And this audience also, I mean, we've seen the costumes they come up with at conventions, so we know they're creative.
Amazing. Yes. Amazing things, yes.
Yeah, so again, we're talking to Leslie Bannatyne. She's the author of Halloween Nation, Behind the Scenes of America's Fright Night. The book is out now. Have a link up on GeekSpeakBetterShow.com in the link section. You can go there and order the book for yourself if you haven't gotten it. And before we take a quick break, one little question for you, Leslie, is what is your best Halloween memory, whether when you were younger, now, good or bad?
Oh, gosh. I can say two. One's really short. I got my first kiss on Halloween. I don't know who it was. I was maybe 10 years old. He was Zorro. I you know, he came up behind me, kissed me on the cheek, and ran away. I don't know who he is to this day. Please step forward if you're listening.
Or what it was.
And the second, I would say, it was wonderful to be walking up 6th Avenue in the Village Parade with all those people. I did that in 2008, and it was just a joyful experience with everybody around you with a huge smile on their face and a million costumes I hadn't heard or thought about before, walking through the middle of New York City with, you know, no traffic, just people. It was wonderful.
Now, this is where the fun begins. Let's try to keep it. Let's stick to the tradition that we started a few years ago, which is telling ghost stories. I mean, we do that in real life anyway. So I brought it to the Geek Speak. I mean, to the Geek Speak Show, to the Paranormal Perception. Well, the Geek Speak Show too, but to Paranormal Perception, and then also to the Christmas episode, the Paranormal Perception Christmas episode. It's all about not just ghost stories, but your ghost stories. You guys, the listeners. And you never disappointed. You always sent in your stories, your experiences. Like I said, some of you sent in spooky songs for the Christmas episode. So it was a lot of fun hearing your stories and putting them together and playing them back. So I'm going to play, actually, I think it's one from a listener, and I think the other two are from us. Actually, yes, they are. Well, you're going to hear them. They're fun. They're a little long, but you're going to like them. You're going to enjoy them. They're spooky, but fun. I mean, that's Halloween in a nutshell there. So here we go. Well, actually, hold on. If we're going to stick to traditions, let's do this right. Let's get the rain going. Let's get the storm. Open the window. Let's hear the storm outside. I can even hear I can feel the coolness even. I can hear thunder, the rain. Oh, over here. We're missing. Where's the wood? Here we go. Let's start the fire also. And it's a good thing that this is the final episode. I just realized this is the last few pieces of wood. So we don't have any more wood for the fireplace. Good thing this is the last one. We won't be able to start a fire anymore. So let's light the fire one last time. Now that it's warm, we've got the fire, the crackling fire. Everybody have a seat, relax. You really don't have to do any work this time, except get some coffee, get some cocoa, whatever warm beverage of choice you want. Sit down, turn off the lights, and prepare to be frightened.
It was a Friday night. It was about 3 o'clock, 3 a.m. in the morning. I was fast asleep when all of a sudden my sister's voice, who had passed away 2 years before, she said, "Gary, can I hear him?" So I woke up vertically thinking, what was that? That sounded like my sister. Then as I said that, I looked up and I saw the biggest white horse, all in medieval armor, and a skeleton figure dressed in armor. He had a crown, a bow, the biggest sword I've ever seen in my life. And he was just hovering above me. And I was in shock. I didn't know what to do. I got emotional. I thought it had come for me. I thought my time was up. I thought, that is it. My life's finished. This is repercussions for maybe things I'd done when I was a bit younger. I jumped out of bed and it was still there. For 30 to 45 seconds, it was just there staring at me. The horse didn't move. The skeleton just drew his sword and put it up in the air. I started crying. I was physically in an emotional state. I picked my mother's Bible up and started to say the Lord's Prayer, but nothing happened. And 30 seconds or 45 seconds is a very, very long time to cry. I just couldn't stop crying. All these thoughts were going through my head. That's it. I'm never going to see my family again. I'm never going to see no one again. I fell to the ground on my knees. Still reading the Lord's Prayer. Very emotional. Then it just disappeared that quick. And I just didn't know what to do. My partner at the time lived upstairs. So I run up to her place and I explained what had happened. And she's a non-believer and she did not accept what I said. She just said, "Oh, you a dream." I said, honey, I was awake, and I know exactly what I saw. For a good week, I couldn't sleep. I kept thinking it was going to happen every night. Then I bumped into a lady that I knew was into spiritual. She went to spiritualist church and all that. And I sort of asked her, I told her what I said. And as calmly as I said it, she said, pick your mother's Bible up and go to Revelation chapter 6. Well, I run home, pick my mum's Bible up, read chapter 6. And it's when God releases the four apocalypse horses. And the white horse, exactly as I saw, the Bible described exactly what I saw. The white horse, the man, the crown, the hat, the bow, and the sword. And he had, his reason for it was conquer to conquer. Then there was a black horse, a grey horse, and other horses. And I didn't really understand what it meant, because it hadn't sunk in. Then about a week later, I realised, apocalypse, that's the end of the world. And I just had so many thoughts going through my mind. I was still so scared. This was the early part. Although I was told I had a gift when I was sick, because it runs in my family. But I'm the only man in the family that it's ever been passed down to. It's always been my great aunties, my nan, always women. I come from a Romani background. My ancestors left northern India late in the 1800s. They got to Persia and they went north, south, east and west. And to have, at the time, that when this happened, I thought, well, I just wish I hadn't had this gift. Because I didn't know how to react, didn't know what to do. But the more I understood, the more I read it, the more I understood. Out of the four horses, he wasn't a really bad one. But to this day, I just still think about it. And it gets me through a lot of bad times. There's a paranormal, there's always yin yang, there's always good, there's always evil. To me, it always seems to be evil. But you got it, the hardest thing was, it was there for that long, 45 seconds was a very, very long time. I hope people, if they listen to this, understand that. That's all I can really say about that time, Henry. It's just the most frightening time of my life. Yeah, this is Gary, and I wish everybody a really happy holidays and a happy New Year.
Ahunyat, hey everybody. My name is Sean Klein and welcome to A Short Story with Sean Klein from Sean Klein Shadow Productions. And yes, I did say Sean Klein like four or five times there, but I just want you to remember my name. So this short story I'm going to be telling you is one of the things I learned on my travels in the paranormal world. This one's going to be titled The False Face. So when you are a medicinal person, or you're somebody that goes against the darkness and wants to help the innocent people in the world, one thing that I've learned is when you go against the darkness, never pray against somebody. Never go against somebody like that, as far as for using their name, using their face, if you're going to be fighting for good. Reason why I say this is because one thing I've learned in all my travels with my brother, as well as other medicinal people growing up, is that when you're doing a ceremony, the spirits will tell you and show you the face of the person that's affecting you. They will tell you who's the one that's witching you and your family. But you have to be very careful with this, because a lot of times, throughout all the years that good and evil have fought against each other, evil beings themselves have caught on to these tactics of knowing who you are as far as an evil person witching you. So with this, you have to be careful, because when you're looking into the crystal or you're looking into any spiritual objects that show you the person that is affecting you, you have to be a little wary. You have to be a little careful with that, because sometimes the evil and the darkness that's out there uses a false face. One example of this is during a ceremony I went to with my brother a long, long time ago. One of my very first ceremonies I went to with him was a family was getting affected by an evil demon inside of their home. And during the ceremony, when you do these, a lot of times the lights are turned off. It's in complete darkness. And we called forth this demon that was in this home. And when it peered around a corner, this demon wore a face of a man that we knew that was very close to us. And we questioned, and I looked at my brother. I was like, is that so-and-so? He's like, no. And then he told the demon, he was like, go back and come back again. Then that demon changed his face to a different person. The reason why we say be careful of trying to identify the person that you're trying to see who's witching you is because those demons oftentimes take on the face of somebody who is not in the picture right now, or could be an innocent person. So when you pray and when you go to try to go against these evil beings, you have to say, I'm going to send this evil and dark energy back to where it came from. You never name anybody specifically, because there have been cases of where medicinal people would say, hey, go against so-and-so from this house. This is the person that's doing it. They would get witched, and that darkness and that evil would get redirected to them when they're an innocent person themselves. So when we were doing that ceremony, this demon was a demon of greed and darkness. So my brother pulled out a rock of fool's stone, fool's gold, and he tossed it into the light of the fire to entice the demon to come closer. And when it came closer, this demon wore the face of five different people all at once. And it was very, very, very freaky in my eyes, because I've never seen anything like that. Even the family that was there participating in the ceremony saw this demon come out of the darkness and the shadow. And it was enticed by that evil, enticed by that greed of that gold. So when that happened, that's when my brother tossed out some of his spiritual items to be able to capture and encase that demon inside of there. But there wasn't just one, there was two demons inside of there. And the second demon was a demon of darkness and shadow. And I remember after that first demon was captured and encapsulated, we heard a woman cry. Then that woman cry turned into a baby cry. Then that baby cry turned into a male voice crying out. So we went into the room where those voices were calling out, and we turned on the light, and then the screams and cries stopped immediately. So after that point, that's when we knew we were dealing with a shadow spirit, a shadow being, and we took out our spiritual items that go against the darkness in that way, and we took care of business. So going back to this is, when you do these ceremonies or when you show these, try to find out the evil beings that are there, always be careful, because sometimes they could be wearing a false face. So there are demons out there that know of these things, and there are demons out there that know these tricks to be able to go against them, and they send those upon the innocents. So always be careful out there, everybody, for anybody who might be wearing a false face.
Halloween, of course, is about things that go bump or boo in the night. It's not that dark in here because I have the lights on because Joel gets scared. But we all have had our own experiences, ghost stories.
Yes, we have.
Or things we think are a little ghostly. We've heard stories from family, from friends. So before we go on anything else, we'll share some of ours. I asked all you guys to send some. You guys never fail. You guys have a few. They're right there. I printed them out for you guys to read. We're going to read them in just a little bit later on in the show. But we're going to start with ours first. We'll show you ours, then you show us yours. So
that's how we play here at the Geek Speak Show.
We'll do ladies first. Joel, go ahead and start.
So one yours. Time back in high school, back in the day.
Wait. That you're not scaring anybody. Let's set the mood.
Hold on. Okay.
Okay, now go ahead.
There's this hospital on 5th and Lake. 15th and Lake, actually. And so it used to be abandoned. This is in San Francisco. And the story goes that it was like an abandoned military hospital. So we used to try to sneak into it. Now it's, it's not scary now because they renovated it. But when it was abandoned, the story goes that apparently, they built that hospital over over a military graveyard, and the tennis courts were supposed to be haunted, and the hospital was pretty scary. Remember, we had to break in through the window and come inside, and it turned out it was it was pretty scary because
he allegedly broke through the window.
I mean, we opened the window, and
that window was broken when they got there.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
The ghosts broke the window.
Thank you, guys.
We got your back.
Yeah, and then, so we went inside, and I remember it was just, a bunch of tags and a bunch of, it was kind of crazy because someone was definitely there before, and there were, a lot of baby dolls hanging.
Ooh.
It was really weird. It was, we couldn't find the morgue, but we went inside, and there was, the main staircase, and I was like, hey, you guys want to go upstairs? And once you, once you step foot on it, this huge alarm went off. We ran out, and that was kind of scary.
The end.
As we discovered last year in the contest we did with the Winchester Mystery House, any story that has dolls in it is automatically
creepy. Yeah.
Scary. Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
So who wants to go next? Jay,
I'll
Rachel?
Go next.
You go next? Okay, Jay goes next.
All right. This is not actually my story. This is the story of a friend of mine who lives in San Jose and has lived in San Jose basically his entire life. And I lived in San Jose. He was my roommate for a long time, for about 3 years. We lived right down the street from the Winchester Mystery House. We were on, Winchester Boulevard. And he used to live in a neighborhood just about 2 miles sort of east of there. Kind of a rundown old neighborhood in San Jose. And in this apartment building, it was his first apartment that he had with, his first serious girlfriend right when he was 18, moved out of his parents' house. In this creepy old apartment building, strange things started happening that couldn't be explained. For some reason, all of the butter knives from their silverware drawer started disappearing right after they moved in and unpacked. And they couldn't find them for a long time, but there were flickers in the lights and weird noises, especially at night. A lot of weird, uncalled for creaks, especially in the pipes in the bathroom. And you can attribute all of those things to just, it's an old building and, it's an apartment. So, of course, things are going to break down with time. But the really weird thing was eventually they found all of the butter knives had magically relocated themselves into the front closet of this apartment building. And they couldn't figure out why. And they both, he and his girlfriend, started having bad dreams and trouble sleeping. And then doors during the winter started to slam, doors and windows, in this apartment. And these are doors that shouldn't be able to slam. They're really heavy, locked from the inside at night, doors. And windows that have, the double panes, and they're old and they're creaky and they stick more than they should slam. And so he decided to go to the library and look up the public records of this building. And it turns out that in his apartment, I think it was 4B, in this crappy little San Jose neighborhood about 30 to 50 years ago, something like that. Like, I think it was during the early 70s. There had been a break-in in their specific apartment where a woman was living by herself. It was a hotel back then. And a woman was staying there long-term, and a guy broke in to try to rob her, not knowing that she was home. And she hid in that front closet holding a butter knife in order to defend herself because it was the only knife that she had available to her. And it turns out that the robber actually found her and shot her in that front closet. And before she died, she stabbed him in the throat with the butter knife, and he stumbled backwards and died in the bathroom.
That's scary.
It's really creepy.
Is that not a good one?
I'm getting chills.
That's a good one. Yeah.
The tale of the butter knives.
It all started with a butter knife disappearing.
All in the same area as the Winchester Mystery House.
San Jose is a very haunted area.
Yeah, you mentioned the Catherine Cosman she was on, and San Jose is very, very, a very haunted city. So there you go, more proof of that. So, Rachel.
Better storyteller than
you.
All right. So, mine is pretty crazy as well. This actually happened to me. So, yeah. So, my mom and my dad bought a house. And the people that lived there before had two little kids. And
that's scary enough.
Oh, yeah. And when they purchased the house, one of the bedrooms, which was the children's bedroom with the wallpaper, and you could tell, had like a sliding lock on the outside of the children's bedroom door.
Ooh, I like that.
Which is, yeah, creepy enough to start with. So they were like, all right, whatever, we'll take that down. That's a little strange, but you know. And of course, I did not know this, and that happened to be my bedroom, of course, when we moved in.
Yay.
So all the strange things started happening right away. I mean, this has always been the case in her house. And doors, same thing, opening and closing, lights on and off, random sounds here and there. And it's funny because my dad would say, you guys are crazy. That's nothing. That's, you know, something because of the house or this or that, always finding a reason for things. And we're like, no, it's pretty creepy. So we would be upstairs, let's say, like me and my sister or somebody upstairs, and my mom would come to the bottom of the stairs and say, what do you guys want? And we'd go over there and say, well, we didn't call you. And she would have heard a kid saying, mom. And then we started hearing someone calling for mom, and it was neither of us. And so some little kid was calling for mom, and we would be getting ready for school or whatever we were doing, and we would hear like kids' laughter.
Ooh.
Now, it wasn't necessarily sinister, but it, little kids laughing that don't exist, that's a little creepy.
Yeah.
So my sister and I, my mom's a voice teacher, so we would be practicing vocals and things, and we had sheer
love music.
They do. There's something about it. And so we had sheer curtains. And so my sister was practicing a song, and the curtain moved and something sat on the windowsill.
Oh.
So and it would just sit there and it would listen to us sing. And then we would get out of the shower and there would be a little handprint on the shower sometimes.
That's super creepy.
We decided that there was a little boy because just based on the fact that our mom then told us that there was like trains and things on the walls when she first had seen it. And so another creepy thing actually is I sleep with my eyes about half open.
Okay.
Just whatever.
It's kind of common.
It is pretty scary.
Yep, and I do that. So I would sleep. My bed was facing a window, basically across the room would be the window. And so when I slept, I'd be facing it. And at night, I would get woken up because something would move past the window and I'd see the change in the light in the room. And so this happened pretty frequently, enough that I would have to try to put something over the window or try to turn the other way or whatever. And so I would see something walking. I could hear footsteps like on the carpet, you know, back and forth between the two bedrooms in the hallway. And then as I started being more aware of all these different sounds that were you know, obviously not normal. I would be sleeping, and at the end of the bed, something would pull the covers under the bed so that my feet would lay flat.
Ooh.
And I would, yeah, and I would wake up from it. And so I was very creeped out about that. And then I would tell my mom about it, and she was like, I don't know. And sounds like a, you know, the little boy, but he should be friendly. And she was always trying to make it better. So my dad thought we were crazy. He thought I was crazy. I don't know. And he came home one day, nobody was home and it was dark, and he turned on the light and it flickered. And he went into the bedroom, and the door that in the other room slammed. And he was like, okay, well, whatever. It's nothing. Denial, you know.
Right.
So we had a koosh ball, like one of those.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Everyone remember the 90s koosh balls.
Yeah. Yeah, we had one of those. Yeah. Okay. And he had picked it up off the floor earlier and put it on the dresser so, like, the dog didn't get it or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so he walked into his room and did something, turned off the light. And the koosh ball slammed to the ground.
Whoa.
And to make any noise with a koosh ball, you can imagine, it has to be pretty forceful. And so he turned around, and it was laying in the middle of the floor. And so he picked it up and said, okay, that's enough. And then he believed us after that. And so the final thing in this craziness is I was sleeping. And after all the sheets being pulled and everything, I had something sit on the corner of my bed. And it sat so hard. It could have been like a jump, too. It was mm-hmm. so forceful that it literally threw me out of my bed. And I woke up, like, against the wall.
Whoa.
So after that, I was like, okay, what do you want? I don't need to be thrown across the room.
Well, you're sleeping in his bed.
Well, so what happened is my mom would start talking to him when she was home alone or whatever to, you know, a little boy. Oh, and... then she started seeing a man standing out in the yard dressed in a cowboy hat and flannel. And when she was home alone, she would see him standing out in the yard just watching.
Oh, that's unsettling.
So she decided that he was watching over her when she was home alone. So to this day, if you go to my mom's house, you will hear the little boy. And every time I go home and visit and I'm sleeping, I see him pass the window at least the first couple nights that I'm there because he's checking to see who's in his house.
So your mom still lives there.
Yeah, more power to your mom for living there.
Oh, totally. She's like, he's fine. He's friendly.
No, thank you.
It's character.
Have they ever looked into the history of the house or what happened there or what any of that?
We did look into the history, and there was only one family that had lived there before, and the parents live next door to this house, and the son and his wife and the kids, I think there was two little kids, lived in the house, and then couldn't afford it anymore or something, and they had to move. But the wife was like a little crazy. She had issues. And so the family always knew that there was something mentally wrong with her. And so I'm assuming that she kept the kids locked in the room, and it was something else very wrong.
Okay, so the stories were mainly from us and also from the Geek Speak show once again. So we're almost at an hour here, a little over 40 minutes. I don't want to go any longer than that. I really don't want to go 2 hours. Part of the I'm done with paranormal perception mindset I've been in since last year, quite honestly. And yes, I'm going to explain why I'm ending paranormal perception in a minute. But first, before we get to the goodbyes, first one thing I do want to do is I want to recognize all the friends, guests who became friends, and at the same time, go back down memory lane a little bit from the past 8 years of paranormal perception. So I want to do that now, and then I'll get to the goodbyes. So first of all, first person I want to recognize and say thank you to is my friend Aaron Olash. It was Aaron, in fact, who first suggested that we do a paranormal podcast. And it was also Aaron who came up with the name Paranormal Perception. I've said that in other interviews before, but it wasn't me. It was Aaron Olash who came up with the name Paranormal Perception. So even though she's not a co-host anymore, in a way, Aaron has always been a part of the show. The name, at least, is always there. So I always thought about Aaron and the name she came up with, which... it's pretty catchy, honestly. So definitely got to start with the first one, Aaron Olash, who was the first co-host. When she left, the two co-hosts that came right after Aaron, they were also quite instrumental in shaping the sound of Paranormal Perception. That was Wednesday Darkling and Raven Hawthorne. Both of them brought unique perspectives, I'll say, to the topics that we talked about on all of the episodes back then. And then the late Doug Carnahan, he was a huge influence on the show. I met Doug actually before Paranormal Perception even existed. So when I added a paranormal consultant to the staff, it had to be Doug. So really miss him. He's no longer with us, but you know, I have to give a big shout out, as the kids say, to Doug Carnahan. I know a lot of you knew him and remember him, so Doug is definitely one that influenced the sound, the early sound especially, of what Paranormal Perception has become. And this next one, I honestly don't remember. We actually talked about this, not on the air, but we were having a conversation. They don't remember either, but I honestly don't remember how I learned about Two Realm Paranormal. But I'm glad I did. I'm glad I did reach out to them, or maybe they reached out to me. I don't remember how, but I'm glad we found each other somehow. Sabrina Marie and her mom, Teresa, they definitely added different views on paranormal topics, but I especially appreciate our private conversations about life and of course the paranormal. But it was really, they're really real friends more than, and they're not just show guests. They became really, really good friends. And, it's a friendship that I know is going to continue long past Paranormal Perception and all of this stuff. They are going to definitely be lifelong friends, and really appreciate them for that. Jay and Marie Yates, they were great guests, but they became even better friends. Although they don't do anything paranormal anymore, but they're still friends that I know I can call on just to say hi. Or if I need life advice, I can call on them, text them if I need to. So really, really appreciative of them and their son, Brandon, too, and everything that we did with them. They really were like family. Even if we didn't see each other all the time, every time we did see each other, that there was that family feeling always. So we'll always appreciate Jay, Marie, and Brandon, their son, Brandon, for that. Patty Negri also falls into that category. Doug actually introduced us at one of his paracons, and Patty's remained a good friend since that time to now. She's always fun. Always the definition of a pro. So really appreciate Patty and everything that she's done, and her friendship, of course. Now, other guests who became friends and definitely shaped the sound of Paranormal Perception were Nicole Strickland, Todd Bates, and Pete Orbea. Some of you may remember him as Paranormal Pete Orbea. It's always fun having them on the show and me being a guest on their respective shows. They each had a show on WLTK-DB, the online paranormal radio station. And it was always fun talking to them, or them being on Paranormal Perception and talking to them. They also did a lot of things with OC Paracon. So, again, really appreciate them, their friendship, their advice. And again, people that have gone, that have become friends beyond just for the paranormal. We have an interest in that, obviously, but Our friendships go beyond just ghosts and things that go bumped in the night. I also want to thank Ernie Alonzo, Charles Bradley, and Darcy Staniford, and really the entire team of docents at Haunted OC. Ernie and his staff, they've been very supportive of the show, of Paranormal Perception, and OC Paracon when I started doing those, both financially as sponsors and also by organizing presentations for a few of the OC Paracons. Last year, which now is, we can call it the last OC Paracon, Haunted OC didn't really have a presence. It was the first time that they really weren't there. They didn't have a presentation, but Ernie still showed up. He was sitting there during the, he definitely caught the, Women in the Paranormal panel. He came to say hi. And so I saw him there. So again, like I said, thankful to Ernie, Darcy, Charles, everybody, really all the docents at Haunted OC. Again, people that will remain friends long after I'm done with Paranormal Perception. So again, I'm here publicly. I'm just saying thank you, and really appreciate all your support through these 8 years. I also want to thank anyone and everyone who had a hand, no matter how big, how small. But anybody that had a hand in OC Paracon, helping me organize OC Paracon. But I do have to say, no one did more than my wife. None of you will know, and you don't need to know, but no one will know what she sacrificed to make her husband's dreams of a little spooky gathering come to life. And I appreciate her more than even she might suspect. Now, these last two that I want to recognize and show gratitude for, they were the most influential, not just in what they added to Paranormal Perception, but really how they changed my own life and my perception of the paranormal. The first is the late John Yost. John first came on the show, I forget what year it was, but he first came on to talk about his Alien Abduction Answers documentary. It was about to be released at the time. We struck up an instant friendship, and we had many long, thought-provoking discussions. Sean Klein would call them smoke breaks. But it was long, really thought-provoking discussions on the entertainment industry because, you know, he was a filmmaker. I've always been in entertainment my entire life, so we talked about that. But especially about what messages that John had received from, I'll say, extraterrestrial visitors and what those messages meant for humanity's future. Now that John is gone and certain events are unfolding in front of our eyes, I constantly think of those conversations that I had with John and think, uh-oh, because let's just say we're in trouble. Put it that way. But definitely John had to, I really thank him for his friendship, short friendship. I hate that I only knew him for a few short years before he lost his battle to cancer. But he was a really, really good friend, really trusted him, really trusted his advice also. And again, very supportive of the show and OC Paracon and everything that we did. He was going to be there, but, you know, his sickness had he was battling his sickness by then. So he unfortunately was never able to be a part of, in person, part of OC Paracon. But he would have loved it. He saw the video. He did get to see some videos and pictures. So I know he would have loved meeting all of you guys if he had gone there. Now, the last, but absolutely not the least, I think you can all guess. That would be Unearthing the Supernatural. I was introduced to them by Jay Yates, and from that first meeting to, well, now, they've been a very important part of my life. The show, yes, but my life especially. All of us, really. My entire family's life. Especially as I get older. Although we haven't done anything all this year. They haven't been on it. Well, no, that's not true. Sean Klein, I think, was on one episode earlier this year. But other than that, we haven't really done anything Paranormal Perception in a while. There was no OC Paracon this year, so they didn't do anything. But even though we haven't done anything in quite a while, I still talk to Sean Klein pretty much every day or every other day. In fact, I just spoke to him not long before I started recording this. Because he's the co-host on the Geek Speak show with me. So that's why we still talk. And we still talk paranormal every now and then, but it's really more about the other show. Now, I was going to have him join me for this final segment, but at the last minute, I said, you know what? Let me just finish this one all by myself. Not that I didn't want him on here. It's just, I just want to, this is my show. I started this long before I met the boys. So I just want to finish it with alone. You notice I didn't even bring any of the past co-hosts on here. So I just want to do this one by myself. No special reason other than that's just me. It's just a me thing. But definitely them. Definitely Unearthing a Supernatural. Hero and Sean Klein, they were their teachings, their life lessons, not just for me, like I said, but with my family also, my kids, my son. We, all of us, got very, very close at a Vulture City. Not the Paracon, but Vulture. We went to shoot a pilot one time. It was the team, Hero, Sean Klein, Best Paul was there, and I think a couple other of their teammate members, and my son and myself on the cameras, and it was just us in the city by ourselves. And I had never seen the city, felt it or heard it or seen it come to life the way it did that night. Definitely made us all a lot closer after that. So whenever anything happens, any paranormal happenings happen in my house, or especially if we think they're, if they feel or we think they're a little bit darker, first call is the boys, Sean Clan. So, and again, I really, really appreciate, I can't say it enough how much I appreciate them. I think all of you that saw us at OC Paracon and have seen us in person, think you know, you've seen that connection, how close we actually are. So those are some of the people that, it's not everybody, but you know, the very big, important people to me that really made a difference, not just in the show, what they contributed to the show, but especially what they contributed to my personal journey in, into the paranormal world and to my understanding of the paranormal world. Every all of our journeys are different. I've always said that on the show. And in mine, in my journey, the people that I just mentioned, they absolutely play a very important chapter in my in my book, whatever that's going to be, however that's going to end. Now, there is one last, well, group of people, not one person, a group of people that I really, really, really want to thank, and I have the utmost appreciation for. And I'll give you five guesses who that is. The first four don't count, by the way. That would be all of you, the listeners. Especially, I may not know you. I met some of you. I don't know all of you. But especially those of you that were there from day one, from the very first, the pilot episode, all the way to right now. Those of you that have been there, those of you that have been there for every episode, and you were at OC Paracon, you are the ones that I probably met and know. All of you, for sure, thank you. I really, really appreciate you for listening and, you know, giving this show a chance. I'm not a researcher. I'm not, you know, I don't have years of study. I haven't written books. I'm not on TV shows. I'm just an experiencer like a lot of you are and have had that curiosity about the paranormal. So I really appreciate the fact that you took me seriously and wanted to listen to what I had to say to about the paranormal and to people who were more experienced or more researched than I was in these topics. So really, to all of you, thank you. You are the reason that I recorded this episode every Friday when I first started this to now. So that, I guess, leads to the final point I got to make. Well, if that's the case, then why are you ending it? Well, let me first say that this being the final Paranormal Perception episode, it's really a formality. I really should have, I could have, honestly, ended Paranormal Perception last year, as I was pretty much done with it back then. And let me make it clear, it's not the paranormal that I don't care about. Paranormal happenings, events, things, that's always been in my life since I was 4 years old. Probably before, but when I first noticed it was when I was 4 years old. I know it's going to continue to be in my life until the end, until I'm part of the paranormal. So my curiosity is never going to end. No matter how much Sean Clan and Hero teach me, I'm still going to have questions. Sometimes they get annoyed by that, but I'm always going to have questions even after the teachings that they give me. So that don't think that because I'm ending this show, I don't have an interest in paranormal. Nah, quite the opposite. That's not going to end. So what killed my enthusiasm for this show? Well, there's a lot of answers, but I can boil it down to this. What killed my enthusiasm for doing this show on a weekly basis is the people who make up the paranormal, quote unquote, community. It's the bickering, the gossiping, complaining, irrelevant online posting about you problems, the online fighting for the most selfish and ridiculous reasons. Me being told that because I had so-and-so on my show, and then we can't be friends, I can't talk to you, or I can't be on your show because you included this team, or you had this person. Not everyone, I know. I know some of you are thinking, well, not everyone's like, yeah, not everyone. everybody that I just mentioned by name, that's who. Now, I'm not talking in generalities here. I'm talking about in my experience. So in my experience, just those people that you heard, those are the only ones that have never been that way. Everybody else, that describes you to a T. So that's why. Because what makes me want to end paranormal perception, to quote Danny Glover in Lethal Weapon 4, I'm too old for this shit. Seriously, I expect that kind of behavior, you know, little kid behavior really is what it is. I expect that kind of behavior from all the Hollywood actors I deal with on a every week on the Geek Speak show. And surprisingly, with very few exceptions, they don't act that way. They really don't. But the paranormal folks, forget about it. It's sad. And notice I'm talking about paranormal celebrities and experts. I'm not talking about the many listeners that I just finished thanking. You guys are normal. Really, you really are. I mean, we're all seen as weirdos anyway, because we see ghosts and talk to spirits, but you know what I mean? We're normal compared to the way these kids act. I just can't take that anymore. I really don't. And I have no reason to. All of those people that are like that, you are the ones that made me say, you know what? I don't need to be around this anymore. So, it's the listeners, the normal people that you guys are the ones that made me think about maybe continuing paranormal perception beyond this year. But then what am I going to talk about if I don't want to interact with the other type of people? See my dilemma? And so that's why there will be no more paranormal perception. As simple as that. So finally, most importantly, again, thank you to all of you that did keep listening all of these years. Really, really, really mean it. Continue to all of you, I say this. Continue your journey, whatever it may look like, wherever it may lead you. Just be careful, but wherever it's going to lead you, follow it. I won't be here anymore. Well, that didn't come out right. The show won't be here. I'll be here still, knock on wood, but the show won't be here anymore. Paranormal Perception won't. But I really do hope your journey leads you to have a new perception of the paranormal. Paranormal perception. For now, farewell, my friends.
And that's it for this paranormal journey. Let me reiterate what Henry just said, albeit in my own inimitable style. All of your paranormal journeys are your journeys. You're not wrong, unless you start to follow a path that eliminates your humanity and your empathy towards other humans. Ask questions. Ask many questions. And when you get answers, trust your feelings. You'll know when someone is being facetious about their knowledge or expertise. Thank you again to all of you that accompanied Henry on his journey for the past 8 years. It was interesting and definitely should leave you with a new perception of the paranormal. A paranormal perception. Paranormal perception. Paranormal perception.